Chiland Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining me for the first episode of the week of the Calcio Land podcast. So this is our first episode of the week available on all platforms. I released one earlier this week on Patreon. This year, we'll be doing one on Patreon and one free for all. So if you enjoy Calcio Land and you want to be part of our community, help support our great charity, please consider becoming a patron. But let's get to Calcio. So today, unfortunately, I had started recording with Alex, but he unfortunately had a personal matter that he had to tend to. So I'll be flying solo today, but we'll be talking about transfers with the midway point of the window, talk quite a bit about the Inter-Juve game coming up with game picks with our friend Thousand Names. And we have a superb Inter guest, one of our regulars, Fulvio Santucci, who will give us a breakdown about email about Inter at the end of the podcast. So let's get to the top. I was hoping to get Alex's perspective on Tomori, who at this point looks really, really close to joining Milan. So when Alex and I record again, we'll have a more in-depth scouting report with him in person. But this is what he had to say so far about Tomori. So if you're a Milan fan, hopefully this is exciting for you. Alex describing as a talented center back ability-wise, but there are some questions about him in the air. He still has some bad mistakes in him, which could be a product of being a young player. He also mentions that he is a very smart kid, a smart person. He's been working on a business degree for after football. So it looks like Tomori will be the center back that joins Milan. I know they are haggling over the price of the option to buy. I wouldn't worry too much about that. And I know Milan fans are rightfully thinking of the Bakayoko situation this summer, but I see it a little bit differently because Bakayoko was an older player. His contract, there's only so much time left in it. While Tomori, maybe Chelsea sees him as a long-term piece. So they are not as worried as having an option to buy. Say Tomori does well at Milan, but Milan doesn't want to pay 30 million. Chelsea can take him back. Maybe they can haggle on another price. But I really don't think the amount of the option to buy is really going to get in the way of the deal happening. So this could be a pretty intriguing move for Milan. Keep in mind, they also have Kjaer and Romagnoli. So now they have another good option to go with those two. I also wanted to get into a little bit about Atalanta. I want to take a little victory lap. You guys know I'm not afraid to admit when I'm wrong. Certainly been wrong on Chiesa and other things as well. But I felt very confident that Atalanta was not going to miss Papu Gomez much, if at all. And the results are really showing. I thought even in the Coppa Italia match against Cagliari, and we know Cagliari have not been particularly good this season, they looked really, really good and their usual selves. So I feel really good about Atalanta. I've said it before. If you didn't believe me that they wouldn't miss Papu Gomez, maybe you should believe me when I say that I'm really not counting them out for the Scudetto at all. They have one game in hand, 9 points behind Milan, but they really are the type of team that I could see going on a great run where they win 9 out of 11, something like that. So I absolutely take Atalanta super, super seriously. So now let's get to our game picks. We have the big game this weekend. Thousand Names, as usual, also sent me two other games, and I'll give you my perspective as well on these games. So let's start with the big one, Inter hosting Juve. Thousand Names has Inter winning 3-2. With a brace by Bastoni, a goal by Sanchez, and a brace by Ronaldo. His comments is that Lautaro and Bonucci are going to get red cards, that Vidal is going to miss a penalty, but that Conte is going to celebrate the fact that he destroyed Pirlo by taking off his hairpiece, and that Andrea Agnelli is going to be embarrassed by this game. In Italian, pronostico Inter Juve 3-2, Bastoni, doppietta, Sanchez, Ronaldo, doppietta, espulsi Lautaro e Bonucci, Vidal sbaglia rigore, Conte abbatte Pirlo e festeggia togliendosi il parrucchino, Agnelli ridicolizzato. I know this might seem like a cop-out, but I'm going to go draw on this one. I think this is going to be a draw, and I'm going to go 1-1, and I'll give a goal to Lautaro and Ronaldo in this game. Then we have another great game, Derby della Capitale. We have Lazio-Roma. 1000 has it 1-1. Goals by Pellegrini and Patric. He also says that Acerbi is going to get a red card, and that who's going to win the derby is boredom, that we're going to see a lot of ugly things in this game, and that Luis Alberto and Pedro make people laugh in Spain. In Italian, Lazio-Roma 1-1, Pellegrini-Patric, espulso Acerbi, il derby lo vince la noia, tante brutte cose, Luis Alberto e Pedro fanno ridere la Spagna. I'm going to go Roma here. I really like what I've seen from Roma. Lazio seem uneven to me. I'm going to go 1-0, and I'm going to go a goal by Zeko to win the derby. Last game picked by 1,000 Names. We have Napoli hosting Fiorentina. 1,000 has Napoli winning 4-0. Mertens brace, Zielinski breaks. And he says Gattuso is going to get ready for the Super Cup by explaining life to Prandelli. And he says Pradel, who is a Fiorentina sporting director, had a terrible transfer window, and that Lirola, who just went to Marseille, deserves respect. In Italian, Napoli-Fiorentina, Mertens 4-0, Mertens doppietta, Zielinski doppietta, Gattuso prepara la Supercoppa spiegando la vita a Prandelli, mercato ridicolo di Pradel, Lirola merita rispetto. You'll be shocked to hear that I agree with 1,000. I think Napoli will beat Fiorentina, not quite by that amount. I'll go 2-1. I'll go Mertens Insigne, and I'll give a goal to Vlahovic, who's been absolutely in fuego. I'm sure our friend Napoli outsider won't mind too much that I'm giving Napoli a win and his boy Vlahovic a goal. So those are our game picks. Before we get to Patron and our interview with Fulvio Santucci, let's talk about some hot transfer topics. So I'm recording this Friday morning. Couple of developments. Now, Atalanta's stance with Papu Gomez is they are only willing to sell him to a top Serie A team for a big offer. What does a big offer mean? I would imagine for a 33-year-old with a big contract that would be removing big wages for them, they are looking at big offers, maybe 10, 12 million. I don't think it's like 20 million. Yesterday I was playing FIFA in career mode and I sold Papu for 50 million. Definitely won't be that, guys. But I think even for any of the clubs in Serie A paying 10 million cash, and it wouldn't be a loan with option to buy, this would have to be a straight sale. It's not going to be easy, especially for an older player and one that you kind of have to build your team around. So I don't know what's going to happen with Papu. Maybe he'll decide he wants to take a big offer from abroad. Maybe he'll end up like Milik, kind of at the outside of the project. But look, Atalanta has him under contract for the next few years, so they're in really no rush to sell him. He doesn't have an amortized value that they're carrying on their balance sheet. So they are right. They have all the leverage. And I don't see why they should reinforce a team that they are competing with for a Champions League spot and maybe even for the Scudetto at this point. So you guys know how I felt about this situation. I was completely on Percassi and Gasperini's corner on this one. And so far, the facts are proving them wrong. Right, I should say. And then we have Milan, who are signing Meite from Torino. And I think this is a pretty good move because I always like the idea of targeting players that have a pretty good track record, but that aren't really bad teams. And 2 years ago, and we were talking about Meite on the podcast fairly often 2 years ago as someone who made an impact. But, you know, he's been bad. Torino's been bad for a while. And I think Meite definitely fits a need at Milan. He's better than Krunic. He will help in that role. I'm really not too worried about how much he's going to cost down the line. Is Milan going to keep him? Milan has actually a lot to play for this season. So I think this is a good move. I don't think you can do much better in January. So a solid move by Milan. So they reinforced the midfield. Tomori is coming for the defense. And then there's a lot of buzz on Mandzukic. And I saw yesterday Di Marzio reported that The news is Mandzukic is open to joining Milan, but there really hasn't been contact between the parties, wouldn't surprise me if Mandzukic wants a pretty decent size contract. And for me, I wouldn't compare him to Ibra. I know they're, but he's younger than Ibra, but Ibra was still playing, and I know MLS, you know, but it's still higher level than the Middle East. I don't know. I'm not crazy about this idea of Mandzukic at Milan, but, you know, is Mandzukic better than Pavoletti that's actually been playing for Cagliari? It's kind of hard for me to tell. I would have to know what condition Mandzukic is in. Then another two names, two strikers that we're hearing about pretty often, Kwame on Fiorentina, who now have decided they want 20 million for him. So Comiso has decided that Kwame is now worth more than what he paid for him in the middle of COVID. I think that's debatable. But look, I like Kwame, and I don't blame Fiorentina for not wanting to give up on him unless they get a big offer. So it doesn't sound like Kwame will leave. And I think that leaves Lammers from Atalanta as the likely next striker to join Torino. And I think that would be pretty intriguing because Torino has gotten nothing from Zaza. Belotti definitely needs help up front. And I think Lammers could do it. Very technical player. I think for Atalanta, too, sending him on loan makes sense. They are deep up front with the way Ilicic and Muriel are playing. Zapata's back on. So look, you know, I think they can sacrifice a striker. I'd really like to see Atalanta getting a defensive midfielder just for that, but I think they can spare Lammers. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so high on Atalanta to win the Scudetto, is they just can deal with these short schedule, a lot of games, even dealing with COVID, unfortunately, because they are very deep except for central midfielder. And that's even if they move Lammers on loan. And a couple of other things that have changed on the market. It looks like Inter are going to keep Eriksen and Conte's changing his position, which I think is the best example that they do want to push forward for him. And I think Fiorentina, with the way Vlahovic is playing, no longer need to worry about adding a striker in January. So let's see what happens in the next few weeks. Not surprisingly, this hasn't been the most eventful January window. Okay, guys, unfortunately, one more solo pod from me, but I promise that there's no issues with Alex. Actually, this morning we got together, talk about the podcast this year. We were about to record. He had a personal matter that came out of the blue. I hope everything's okay. But don't worry, Alex, when I will be doing shows this year, it'll be once a week. And the other week will be more just for you guys on Patreon with me. And that will be with guests. I don't want you guys to think that the Patreon episode I did this week is what it's going to look like, because we'll definitely have guests on those as well. I was just recovering from the surgery. So let's get to your Patreon questions. We have a lot. I'll do my best to answer them to the best of my ability with Alex out. So let's start with Sabrina. Glad to hear you're doing better. I was wondering if a coach is still under contract with a team. Do they have to come back when they call? Like, the Vats have the choice to come back, or was he required to? So if a coach is sacked and then they replace him, and they decide to bring him back, like the Vats, and we've seen it a few other occasions of other teams, yeah, they have the option of saying no. But if they say no, then they forfeit their salary. So the Vats, you know, I guess Daversa's option was like, you know what, he could have turned down Parma and then say, I can go sign with another team, because he had yet to coach someone in Serie A this season. So he could have done it. So you can say no, but you lose your money, which you probably won't see happening that often. Then our friend Rafa asks, is it too soon to be concerned with how the big team struggles in the Coppa Italia games? Could it be fatigue slowly catching up as we saw a big team in other countries struggle? Yeah, I definitely think this is catching up to teams. Look, this has been a crazy season, and I don't think it's just physical. I really think it's mental, and I think we all too often think that these guys are superheroes, these athletes. So, no, I definitely think it's catching up to them. Gino, thankful you're doing well. Good to know. Your comments like sweet, but well received. Thank you for sharing. I appreciate that. Thank you, everyone, for the kind words. In regards to Inter, what is going on with the ownership chains, and also what is with Conte doing a 180 on Eriksen all of a sudden? So next week, I want to bring on our friend Bernhardt to talk about Inter's ownership change, because he really understands the financials much better than I do here. I have to say, I was very surprised that Suning was trying to sell during COVID, but you know, it definitely looks true. I mean, Marotta definitely confirmed it. And as far as Conte doing a 180 on Eriksen, for me, it's the saying in Italy, di fare necessità virtù. So, you know, they saw that it was really hard to move Eriksen and bring in a midfielder that fit Conte's system better. So they're trying to make Eriksen into that midfielder that fits Conte better. Then David Bachrock, so far Milan's moves have surprised me. How do you rate Mate as the fourth CM for Milan and Mandzukic as the backup? I talked about it at the top. I really like Mate as a move. I think it makes a ton of sense. But Mandzukic, not so much. And again, though, Mandzukic is a winner, and maybe he brings something to the table. But I just don't know in what physical shape he is. But I like the Maite move. Majin, do you think that eventually Fijici UEFA will mandate COVID vaccinations for player to participate in matches? Interesting. So I don't know if UEFA would do it. I wonder if Fijici, I think this is something that the federations are going to have to do nationally. I don't think UEFA can. But an interesting thought. It wouldn't surprise me if they do, though. Then Magine asks, assuming both accept Roma, Belotti or Milik to become Roma's next number nine? I like both, but can't make up my mind. As much as I like Milik, definitely Belotti for me. I like Milik a lot. You guys know that, but I'd rather have Belotti. And I think Belotti fits the makeup at Roma really well. Then Kevin says, I get why Verona have done so well since promotion, but I don't really get Benevento's success from a record-breaking season in Serie B to this year being currently solid mid-table. How are they making it work in Serie A this time as a team with very little cultural history from a very small town? Look, you know, I didn't follow Benevento in Serie B, but I heard they had a great defense and it was very hard to score on them. And look, I think they brought in, you know, La Padula players like that, Caprari. Those are Serie A players. Are they the most exciting Serie A players? No, but they are at the right level there for sure. Yeah, and I think, look, another big part of this is, you know, the fact that Inzaghi has become a really good coach. And then Kevin has a lot of other points on the history of Benevento. Yeah, that's going to be a great shout for next time Napoli outsider comes on. And then where would you like to see Nzola from Spezia go next season, assuming they get relegated? I think Verona would be a good fit. I love it. Great shout. And Nzola, Verona, really, really nice shout. Bologna, too, is the other team that jumps out at me that I think would be really good for him. Then Edo asks, could you see Gattuso as the Azzurri coach when Mancini is done? I've been thinking about it lately, and it seems like the best fit for the job. It's funny you say that, because today I was talking to my friend Adam Digby, who mentioned that Lippi said that the coach he sees the most himself into is Gattuso, and that's something Adam had said on our pod a while ago. Yeah, and I could totally see Gattuso, the makeup, the type of person that he is, being a good fit on Italy and really liking the job. And also, you know, I still don't think tactics is the biggest strength of Gattuso, although it's not a liability, but I think he has the makeup to do well on the Azzurri. And then Super Mario asked, even Marotta confirmed that Suning is having talks over a possible sell of shares. With reports getting more and more serious, there would probably be a majority part of shares, not just a smaller one. How concerned would you be on a scale of 1 to 10? Look, I think Suning has done well. I'm going to defer to what you'll hear from Fulvio Santucci in a minute, and I promise we'll cover more of the sale of the team with Bernhard, who I think is really well qualified for this. And then Super Mario asks, who do you see as the new Inter captain for next season, with Handanovic being at risk of losing the number one spot between the posts? Look, whenever Handanovic starts, he'll be the captain. When he doesn't, I don't know. I feel like you could make a case for Skriniar, although he's young. De Vrij, Lukaku, I think, would be a great shout, too. If I had to pick, I would go Lukaku, I think. But you could go, if you went De Vrij or Skriniar, again, young, it's more his love for Inter. I think it's too soon for Skriniar. So I'm going to say it comes down to Lukaku or De Vrij to be the next Inter captain. Next up, our friend Ian Ferreira. When Gattuso was fired at the end of 2018-19 season, there were some people who criticized the decision and even mocked Milan. The criticism started high point when Napoli won the Coppa Italia, while Milan had to be undefeated. Fast forward 6 months, and while hiring Gianpaolo was a big mistake, do you think Milan's success under Gattuso, that maybe pushing success under Pioli has shown that maybe pushing Gattuso out wasn't a mistake? I don't know. Let's say you give Ibrahimovic to Gattuso. What do you think happens? I think you get the same results as Pioli. I really do. So I don't know if it changes my mind. Look, you are making up for the mistake of letting go of Pioli, of Gattuso, and replacing him with Gianpaolo. But I wouldn't say that. I think Gattuso would have done just as well, to be honest. Then Nicolas Zamboni asks, who are you most impressed with for Juve's youth squad against Geno, I guess, including Scamacca and Rovella. And look, I'm not that high on either of them. I like the wing back Wesley stood out to me. And the center back, Dragusnik, I think is pretty intriguing for Juve. But look, in my opinion, none of these players have a long-term future at Juve. Those are all future plusvalenza, in my opinion. Then Jesse asked, should Milan have gone for Seco Fofana in the summer instead of Mete now? Udinese gave him away at Lens. The difference is, though, Fofana was a straight sale, 10 million. Mete is 10 million, but it's loan, option to buy. It's a pretty different 10 million. Look, Fofana, Mete 2 years ago, about the same. Mete is still young. He can go back to being that player. I don't think it's a huge drop off, Jesse. I actually think it's just fine, to be honest. Next up, Dieter, what would be your lineup if you can only use Lazio and Roma players? Now, interestingly, goalkeeper is really, really rough, man. Strakosha has been bad this season, but I probably still take him over anyone. But definitely not the Roma keepers. I like Acerbi, but then I want the other Roma center back. So I'm going to take Ibanez and Kumbula or Mancini. But Acerbi, I think, definitely belongs there. The wing backs, I think, are I like Lazzari and Spinazzola. So I'm going to take those as the wing backs. Midfield, I definitely want Luis Alberto and Milinkovic-Savic. And VR, man, that's a nice little midfield there. And then I want Immobile and Zeko. So that's a nice team right there, for sure. And then Joey, one of our newer patrons, thanks for sharing your personal experience. David, it was very inspiring. I'm thrilled to hear you improving and feeling better. Thank you, everyone, for the well wishes. With Mandzukic rumored to join Milan, will this mean the end of Leao at striker? This get Pioli's comments. I think his best games have been played there. Only highlight at left wing was against Inter. I know Mandzukic has played many positions in the past, but I still can't imagine he has the legs to play wing. Look, I think Mandzukic, if he comes, he's a backup to Ibrahimovic, period. Yeah, and I agree. I think Leao has been pretty good in that role. He seems to be doing better. But I just don't know how much Mandzukic is actually going to be able to bring on the pitch. I see him more as a bench player. I don't know how many starts he has in him. Love the next question from AJ. If Spezia managed to stay up this year, do you think Italiano would still be their manager next season? Will he be poached by a slightly better team? To me, this is exactly like Sarri at Empoli. He's going to be poached. He's going to save them, but he'll still be gone. Same with Gianpaolo. I think Italiano is going to be at Bologna, Fiorentina, Verona, a team like that next season. I think even if Spezia managed to stay up, they're going to try to find a young coach that can kind of be an Italiano disciple. And then Ola asks about Alice's scouting report on Tomori. Sorry, guys. I promise. Trust me, I'm not lying to you. Alex is definitely going to be a huge part of the show. I know you guys keep hearing from me. I'm kind of sick of hearing from me, too. And then Jesse asks, do you think Romagnoli needs to have a center back partner that's worse than him to shine? He seems more focused when that's the case. I don't know. That's probably not a great sign. I think maybe when he has a bad partner, he has more opportunities to shine, to make up four mistakes, but I've always said it in my mind. I think you can win with Romagnoli as your second best center back, but he can't be your best center back. At Milan, maybe if you put him on another team, Jesse, on a crappier team, that makes more sense. Then Bernhard asks, do you think Juve will not have to fear any consequences about everything Paratici and Agnelli said is proven wrong? Suarez's case was like no ever doubted they were behind, but breaking COVID protocols and getting away with a five-figure fine is something else. So Bernhard's been sending me DMs to me and Derek on this Juve COVID thing. I know it's going to sound like I'm making it up. I have yet to hear about this on mainstream media. But I'm going to tell you, I don't think Juve is going to suffer any consequences from Suarez nor the COVID. And it's not a matter of the, you know, them getting away with things that others don't. I just don't think they are big stories. So sorry, Bernhard. Last one from Bernhard is Akeem Mastour's career, the perfect example of why we should not put so much pressure expectations on these kids. Everyone playing on consoles knows that guy from FIFA for ages. Was one of the future's Messis, and now he's barely a pro. What went wrong? It's what I always say. For every Donnarumma, there's like 20 Mastours. You guys know I very rarely get excited by young players. I believe in sample size. I believe in competition. Mastour got so much hype that went nowhere. And look, you know, it's not his fault. But yeah, I do think we need to hype people a little bit less. So again, thank you guys for your patience. Sorry it's been so many episodes with just me. Alex will be back soon, but at least today we have a great guest with Fulvio Santucci. Very excited to welcome our next guest, who's now become a regular on the pod. I think we've done four or five of these already. Our good friend Fulvio Santucci, who is based in Milano. He's kind of become one of our go-to people on Inter. And obviously today we are going to catch up on Inter. Fulvio hasn't been on in about 5 to 6 weeks. A lot has happened. And I also want to ask Fulvio a little bit about Spezia, which is a team he had an excellent tweet on. So Fulvio, my good friend, bentornato to the podcast. Buon anno. Grazie mille that you are on Calcioland. Thanks for coming on today.
Thank you very much, David. It's a pleasure for me, and Happy New Year to you, of course.
Okay, so let's start here, because I definitely want to ask you quite a few things on Inter, but let's keep it very simple. You were on right at the end of November, beginning of December. Here we are in the middle of January. So do you feel better, worse, or about the same about Inter's chances of winning the Scudetto since then?
I have to say that still quite a bit the same, okay. To be honest. So I still think that Inter is number one or at least number two favorite team to win the Scudetto. What I learned into the last 2 months from the last time that we spoke about that is that once again the worst rival for Inter is Inter, not surprisingly. So that means that Inter could just undermine his own points and jeopardize his own gains again and again. So that could be the main obstacle to the road of Scudetto. But on the paper and considering the fact that we are a lapse of time in which the rival will play in Europe and Inter will not, for obvious reasons. Considering this, I think that the chances are practically intact. The thing that could change is the situation on the management, on the company. You know that is rumor. A change is rumored, and this is not good for reach objectives normally. And also Conte hinted that into the last conference press. So that could be unwelcome news for Inter in the world of Scudetto. But let's see in 1 month what is going to happen.
Yeah, I picked Inter to win the Scudetto at the beginning of the season, and I'm kind of with you. I feel about the same as I did 5-6 weeks ago. I don't know. I think Milan's still there. They're hanging in there. Juve, I think, is a little bit better. They're not fully convincing. So, yeah, that sounds about right. So, obviously, there's been a lot of talk on Suning potentially selling the club, maybe a portion, maybe the whole thing. It seems like it's not that different than the timeline that Toier was at the club. So let's just say if Suning's reign ends at some point in this year, or maybe they don't have the majority again, how are you going to look back at their time in charge of the club? From where I'm sitting, I definitely think Inter are better off than when they took over. I think they've definitely moved the club forward. Maybe not to the extent we were hoping, but what do you make of Suning's reign so far?
Yeah, basically, I'm on the same page. I think they tried their best, practically. They tried their best to improve not only the results, but also the financial situation of this company, because they're talking about government, they're talking also about the company. I think that we need to recall from our minds where they started. And they started with a club that was very difficult to manage at the time, that were under a settlement agreement for a financial fair play regime. And it stays like that for 2 years. And despite being like that, they managed to do some right choices and some wrong choices, of course. But at the end of the day, they achieved the first objective for which they were in, which was being stable in the Champions League, being regular into the Champions League. This is the third year, and this is good also for the counting. So I think they achieved that, and they tried to accelerate the process, bringing in Conte to try to win the Scudetto, and to do that, they just did what everyone would did. I mean, the easy way: go with the best coach that you have on the market, go with the best sporting director for an Italian team that you have on the market. I'm talking about the Marotta, of course.
Yeah.
They took care of difficult situations that were created when there was a bit of lack of power, like they got the situation or other situations. So they coped with that and they solved that. Of course, they made some wrong choices along the way and several investments along the way. They failed to find a big sponsor. We wait for this for the next year probably. But COVID wasn't agreed with that. So basically, this is not going to happen, or it's not going to happen in the same condition now. I think the balance is positive. We want to talk about skilled people in managing clubs. We're talking about the first time they manage a club outside of China, which is very different. And I think that at the end of the day, they really try their best. They achieve some good results. They failed to achieve some other results, but at the end of the day, they improved the situation. So, good experience for them and a good experience for Inter, which basically came out from one of the darkest periods of their history.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely fair, a very fair assessment there. I have to say what's really impressed me is how they've changed Conte's demeanor in press conferences and him saying the verb want doesn't exist anymore. I'd really love to know what they told them in that meeting. But in general, I agree with you. They've done great. So let's talk about some players. Let's make it a little bit more fun. So we're recording this Thursday. Eriksen played his first game kind of in the regista role for Inter in the Coppa Italia against Fiorentina. So let me ask you this: what do you, because I don't want to overreact to one game. I thought he was okay. It wasn't great, but I don't want to overreact to one game. But what do you make about the decision to move him there? And do you see him playing in this role? Does this make him mutually exclusive to Brozovic? And I like your perspective on Brozovic. I'll paraphrase and feel free to correct me. You think he's a good player, but he can only take you so far. So Brozovic fine against certain teams, but there's a kind of a limit. Do you feel maybe Eriksen could go a step further than Brozovic in this role?
Yeah, it's tighter, and I mean, we cannot be choosy about Eriksen, considering the history that he had in Inter. We cannot be so much harsh and choosy about his history at Inter. We need to accept every kind of role that that Conte wants for him, because we understood now that he probably needs to reintegrate into the team, since transfer outside of Inter is not probably going to happen. Otherwise, it would be difficult to understand why the change of mind of Conte of Marotta about him. And I heard some interview like 1 month ago, and Marotta clearly say that Eriksen was a part of the project. But it's not like that anymore. And probably because they realize that they cannot sell or loan Eriksen at the right condition. Right now, given the situation, it's okay to try Eriksen in other roles, since it didn't work the first attempt with him. Probably worth the second one, considering the situation. And we were talking about only one game, light and shadow. I mean, he's classy, of course, he's classy, but it's a little bit slow for the idea of Conte, for Conte's football. Is a little bit slow, both in mind, both in mind and in feet. It's a little bit slow to think and to react. And I think that it should be faster. And now let's see what happens. I mean, that position is a key position, right? And so far, yeah, the only one that could fill that position is Brozovic. And this is a key for Inter, because when Brozovic is in, Inter plays better. When Brozovic is in and is in the right mood, to be honest.
Yeah,
Inter plays better. But on the other hand, you know that with Brozovic, you cannot reach the sky, right? You stop like inches before the sky, and that's all. That's all you can give, basically. While if you try to go with Eriksen, and if you are managing the miracle to turning in Eriksen into a key player once again, this could probably be the right intuition. But let's see. It's an attempt, but it's a new attempt, since I think that at this stage, Eriksen needs to be reintegrated into this project.
Yeah, I like what you said, that, you know, Inter has to be realistic. And they said a month ago he was out of the project, and they said there really isn't much market. And, you know, there's a saying in Italy, you know, di fare necessità virtù, you're stuck in a situation and you have to make the best of it. And that's exactly what they are trying to do. So well said there. So now let's... tell me in general, we haven't spoken about Inter in a little while. So tell me, it can be one or two players that have impressed you. And then after, we can get to some disappointment. So in the past 6 weeks, who has kind of taken your attention and you're like, huh, they're making an impact here?
Well, in a range of 6 weeks, specifically to say, But I still would go with Mathieu Darmian, because I think it's a huge revelation of the beginning of the season. I mean, it's not regular into the Inter 11, but he never got the game wrong right now. And even so, Inter had a lot of games wrong back in the days. Darmian didn't fail his part. He continues. He's consistent for the moment, right? When it comes to him, he's always ready. And this is completely unexpected, because most of the fan base, most of the football watchers, just evaluate Damian like a player that already touched the peak. So it was very difficult to predict. But it's good, and it's happy for an Inter fan to can rely on him, because it's very very useful to have a player like this reliable into a team. The second name I think is Milan Skriniar.
That was my pick. Yeah, he would have been my choice. So great shout.
not a surprise, to be honest, at the light of what it did in the Spalletti era with Inter. But a little bit of surprise if you think where he was in August. Like he lost his turn into the regular basis of Inter, and they were chit-chat about him being out to Tottenham, if I remember correctly. So basically, even psychologically, it was not easy to receive this player, especially because back in October he was quarantined for like 12 days, 20 days, 20 or 31 days due to the COVID, was quarantined in Slovakia, his hometown. So it was difficult to expect something like that, but now we know him as supporters, we know him very well, and we see that he plays with confidence. Like he plays with a lot of confidence, and he starts making the things that basically made him famous into our Inter fan base. So it's a good comeback for him, and I'm very happy for him because he cares about Inter, and we can see that, and we as supporters always care about him.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Skriniar would have absolutely been my first shout. I agree. So on the flip side, who in the past 6 weeks or so has left you a little bit meh or maybe a little bit disappointed?
Well, it's not difficult to start here with Arturo Vidal, of course.
Yeah.
Arturo Vidal, Gioppardi's practically by himself, if you think about it, or almost by himself, Gioppardi's entire qualification to the knockout round of the Champions League, especially in the Real Madrid game, which was, if I remember correctly, was like six weeks ago. So he Gioppardi's that match, and he also, then he had an injury, okay, but basically he did not show that he deserved to be always lined up. And this is something that was difficult to predict at the beginning of the season, because this player was so desired by Antonio Conte, had so much experience playing so good team, like the Allegri's Juventus, like Barcelona, like Bayern Munich. And you don't expect this player to be basically lost into the pitch, but lost in that state of mind in which you are lost and you do shenanigans. You do a lot of nonsense things, like falling player that are on their back, so not in front of the goal, and you fold for no reason, right? So it's. And sometimes Vidal seems like that bulk of the video game. So when you just press the wrong button and you think you do something very stupid, right? And Vidal seems exactly like that. So he scored in the last game against Fiorentina, and he promised that after the first goal he will go for another 10. Let's see if he keeps the promise. He's the one that needs to provide the most convincing answers in the second part of the season, for sure.
I totally agree. Let's talk a little bit about Handanovic. I want to ask you this because, look, I think Handanovic was the best goalkeeper in Serie A the previous decade. If I had to pick one, I think he was the most consistent, best overall. I think up until the last few years when he made a mistake, people would just say, he's getting old. And I just didn't think that was totally fair. But I think that maybe now Father Time is starting to catch up to him. In my mind, I think next season, it's kind of like what Juve did when they brought in Szczesny, the first season where he was kind of a co-starter with Buffon. I think it might be time for him. Do you agree, or do you think Handanovic next season can still start, I don't know, 33 Serie A games for Inter in the Champions League and they would be fine? Or do you think it's time to prepare for life after Handanovic?
Well, David, as you follow me on the social media, you already know the answer. But for the ones that are not aware of my ideas on that, the answer is clearly no. And this is not based on the moment. For me, with Handanovic, it's a history long at least 4 years, like now, and became a lot worse in the last two. I think he's a good goalkeeper, right? But he has a lot of defects and struggles that never managed to solve along his career, probably because he knew the really high level at a whole age. I mean, his debut in the Champions League was made when he was like 35, 34, 35.
Yeah.
So probably that was not a boost for his career. And so we are now talking about a 36-year-old goalkeeper, 37 this year, basically keep doing the same thing, like the same weak points are still there, but he starts lacking the reactivity, he starts lacking the decision-making. So, I mean, he's good, but not good enough to go for a title. There's a lot of talks about the role of the goalkeeper, because, you know, for example, AC Milan, back in the days with Arrigo Sacchi and Fabio Capello, won a lot of titles with Sebastiano Rossi into the goalkeeping. And Sebastiano Rossi was an average goalkeeper, but in front of him, there was the best defense that the world ever see, probably. And that was the difference. But when you are at this point with Inter and you go with Andanovic, which also is captain, and this could be an handicap. This could be another handicap because I don't think it's good enough and I think it's strong enough to captain a team to a major trophy. So yes, I would go for a change. The only thing is that who is going to replace him? Because, you know, when you go for a goalkeeper, you need to trigger a domino into the market. And this is not the time to trigger a domino in the market because it's difficult to do that.
Okay.
So I don't know which goalkeeper could be ready. Probably you go with a back. Probably you go with an Italian one. But definitely you need to find a solution for Andanovic because before he's revealing that is a major issue. For now, you only have the suspect, you only have the flavor that it could become a major issue. Before it actually turns into a major issue, Inter needs to think about it.
For sure. So let's talk about that. So I have three names, but I have to say, Fulvio, last time when I threw out some names for coaches, you came up with an even better one than the ones I sent you. So let's see if you can do the same. So when I look in Serie A, there's three keepers that stand out to me that I think could replace Handanovic. We have Musso at Udinese, and Handanovic did come from Udinese when he arrived at Inter. We have Silvestri, who I thought was excellent last season at Verona. I think he's been even better this season. I think he's maybe been as good as any keeper in Serie A this season. And then my personal favorite out of the three is Cragno at Cagliari, who I'm a big fan of. Do any of these three inspire you, or is there maybe another keeper that you have in mind too?
No, this time I'm saying, once again, I'm on your same page because Cragno is my name as well. We are talking about three good players, but Cragno is a bit different because Cragno, for my assumption, for my understanding, for what I see, is the goalkeeper that has the most potential between this rack, right? Musso is okay. He did astonishing things, but my impression is that he's humoral. So sometimes he can do major things, and sometimes he can just achieve major things. And this is not good for a big team, because when you are a good keeper in a big team, I think that you don't need to be astonishing, but you need to be consistent, right? And Musso probably is not like that. While Silvestri is a good one, probably the best goalkeeper so far into the Serie A this year.
Yeah.
But you know, he's now 29. And he's probably 29, go for 30. And he never knew before the pressure of a big team. So I don't think he'd be a good choice for this reason. Probably his career was into mid-range team, mid-table team, or a smaller team. And that is completely different story, especially when you have the goalkeeper and when you make a mistake, everybody notices that. And when you are in a big team, a lot of people notice your mistake. So that is only on the paper, because probably Silvestri can manage this kind of pressure. But see his career, I won't go with that. While Cragno is 26, 27 this year, and they could be just educated to handle this kind of pressure.
Yeah, and plus, you know, Cagliari and Inter with the president at Cagliari, who's, you know, pretty close to Inter. I also think it's a great play on words. Zinga was the great goalkeeper at Inter when I was growing up. He was Ruomo Ragno, and now you have Cragno. I could kind of see it. I'd be kind of intrigued. I like Silvestri and Musso, but I agree with you. I think Cragno has the most potential out of all of them, and I think if Donnarumma wasn't as good as he is, we'd be talking about Cragno as potentially the starter for Italy. If not now, definitely in the near future. Before we get to Spezia, I'm going to put you on the spot. What do you think is going to happen with Inter-Juve? Our Oracle Thousand Names has Inter winning. What do you think is going to happen in this game?
I cannot answer this kind of question, David. I'm sorry. this is the most emotional game for me, and I'm not able to predict anything because, you know, I'm not focused into the prediction. I'm not objective. I cannot keep an helicopter view on this. Probably okay. I can keep an helicopter view on the other stuff of Inter, but not on the match against Juventus. It's too emotional for me, so I cannot go with that. I'm sorry.
Fair enough. What actually is a perfect segue to our next topic, which is Spezia. So you're probably wondering why I'm even asking you about Spezia. But one thing that I really like about your tweets is, you know, I don't know if historian is the right word, but you're very data driven. You really like looking at, you know, your grade with the pots and the Champions League, where teams are going to slot, the impact of a game. And you like looking at the history of calcio. And you had a tweet on Spezia being, you know, because this is their first year in Serie A, the team that are making their debut in the Serie A off to the best start. So I want to ask you this. How surprised were you by Spezia and Serie A? It's not just the results. Like, this team plays really well if you watch them.
Yeah, a lot. A lot surprised. I mean, this is not out of the blue. Because I have a little sympathy for this team, and it's an old history of a long time ago when a good friend of mine, which is a Spezia supporter, just take me to the stands with him, and it was a fantastic experience. Yes, it was Serie B at the time. Probably 2006 or something like that back in the day. So I kept a little sympathy for this team, and I always follow with quite different eye than the rest of the Serie A, except Inter, of course. So that's the backup story that I need to give. To answer your question, a lot surprised, especially because of the history of the season of Spezia. For that one that I'm not aware about that, Spezia managed and achieved the promotion into Serie A like at the end of August due to the COVID. And the season in Serie A started at the end of September. So practically, they have 1 month to transform, to turn a Serie B team, a mid-Serie B team, because it was a huge surprise for a lot of people. The promotion of Spezia, Chievo, Empoli were the favorite pick for this spot, but Spezia took it. And after that, they just need to make a Serie A team in just 1 month, and this was a huge challenge, and everyone expected that Spezia could make the same season of Benevento at the debut. So practically 0 points in the first 15 or 16 games. We were completely wrong about that, because Spezia managed to make a lot of points. As I wrote in the debut to the tweet, is the most successful debutant in Serie A since Siena in 2003. So good achievement. And they play really well. And they don't seem to be at the debut season for some extent. They play with confidence. They play with confidence, and with good idea, I think. So it's good to watch them. It's very difficult because, you know, you have a great gap between Serie B and Serie A, and it's greater every year. So you don't expect to a team that was so used to the Serie B, was like 15 years into the Serie B, to adapt to the Serie A so fast. But they did. They made 17 points in 16 or 17 games, which is not so impressive, but it is a very good, very, very good good results for a debut team. Surprising. Very surprised and very impressed.
Yeah, I and you are more familiar with them than I am. But the two things that stand out to me about Spezia, and we're going to get to their manager in a second because he's a huge reason, is unlike most teams that come from Serie B, they have a legitimate striker. Like, Nzola is a really good striker for the relegation race, and you just really don't see that often with a team coming up from Serie B. But I think the star of the team, and you have, affection for Spezia, and I love the personal story. Like, the reason I like Spezia is their manager, Italiano, is very, very well liked in Padova, where he played. He was a really good regista for, lower division in Serie A. So people in Padova were not surprised he would turn out to be a good coach. But I want to ask you this, because I feel like this time last year, we were saying a lot of the same things about Italiano, about Liverani at Lecce, and now Liverani has just been sacked at Parma. And look, it wasn't an ideal situation for him. Liverani can be a Serie A coach. But do you think Italiano, how do you kind of rate him compared to what we saw from Liverani last season?
Better. I think better because, yes, Liverani made good things, but my impression is that he was depending from some players. For example, last year was Filippo Falco from Lecce.
Yeah.
The last year was very important because he had the quality. Like, probably not the best player that you see into a pitch, but very good fit, and he could solve a match with a strike or with a thunder. Like, suddenly he had the fit to do that. It was like Franco Brienza back in the day, something similar to that. While Italiano is not like that. Italiano is, I have not a player so much better than the others in terms of quality, but my impression is that Italiano is able to adapt every kind of player into system. Not every kind, but almost every kind of player into system. I know because you're talking about Zola, but let's not forget that the striker at the beginning was Garabino. And Garabino, before going injured, made 3 or 4 goals in the 6 or 7 games, if I remember correctly. So Zola was a backup choice. Was a backup choice, and the Garabino injury just made possible that he's rising up right now. And I think that the production and the effectiveness of Zola also depends from the style of play that Italiano is making into Spezia. So it's not Zola that is saving Spezia, but it's Spezia that is saving Zola with his career, basically. That's how I see that. It's a team in which whoever plays good. So I think that this is on the coach. This is an Italian, of course. Especially because it's not the first time. Can you hear me, David?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
I can hear you. Yeah, I can hear you.
Especially because it's not the first time for Italiano. He makes a promotion with Spezia, which was a huge gap into the Serie B. But 1 year earlier, he made a promotion from the third tier to the second tier with Trapani, which was a huge gap because nobody expects Trapani to go into the second tier that year, but Italiano managed. So basically, we're talking about a coach that achieved 2 promotions in a row, from the third to the second tier, from the second to the third tier. Yeah. So, very good, and I witnessed very good things for him, especially because I see that he's managing a football that is fun to watch. He just doesn't choose only way to win. If you think about the match against Napoli, a lot of luck, okay, but you need to trigger the luck. And every victory is a bit different. It's not that you can recognize always this kind of football, but this kind of football is effectiveness, and especially it's balanced. It's very balanced. He never concedes 6 or 7 goals by attacking like other teams, but it's just trying to be balanced. And I think this is important for the future of his career.
Absolutely. So let's talk about his future, because in my opinion, regardless of what happens to Spezia, I hope they stay up. But if they do go down to Serie B, I do expect Italiano to still be in Serie A. And when I look at his situation, I think of last season, and I think clubs like Fiorentina, Bologna, kind of that Torino, like that middle class in Serie A, teams that should be doing better than they are, made a big mistake because De Zerbi and Juric were kind of there for the taking. And in my opinion, now both De Zerbi and Juric can go to better clubs than them. So in my opinion, clubs like that need to start looking at Italiano and saying, this is the version of De Zerbi and Juric in a year or two. So A, do you agree with that assessment? And if you were to advise Italiano on what team he should go to, which one do you think is the best fit for him?
Yeah, completely agree with your analysis. And I was talking about Verona for him, because Verona already has an identity, right now. And we expect Juric to be now stepping up into his career. Probably that's what we expect after one season and a half, very, very good. A kind of miracle the first year, but a kind of miracle also the second year without all the a lot of players that gave him the possibility to be confirmed in the mid table in the first season. So if Juric is stepping up, I think that Verona is a good choice for Italiano, for the team, because the team I think is ready to play this kind of football, even though he's gonna lose some players. I think they are organized to implement a system that is working for everyone, and also because Italiano already played in Verona, back in the days. So he knows about the city, he knows about the team, he knows about the environment. So it's a very good choice for him. Alternatively, would be nice to see him at Fiorentina, because Fiorentina needs a project right now. So he could be the guy that triggers some projects into Fiorentina, because Fiorentina misses a project since Paulo Sousa's days back in 2015.
Okay, I like it. I totally agree on Fiorentina. Like that makes a ton of sense to me. So great stuff. So let's close on this. So Fulvio, we've done quite a few shows. It's awesome talking calcio with you. You've become really, you always would have been a great guest anytime, but it's been fantastic having you on. So I want to tell a quick story on how Fulvio ended up being a guest here. I've been following Fulvio on Twitter for a long time. He's superb. But, you know, we always had a deep Inter bench here. You know, we've had Nima for a long time. We've had my friend Andrew Barker. We have a lot of great Inter guests. And Inter's always a fun team to talk about, and good or bad. But I don't know. I think it was last year. You guys know I love to send tweets when a musician that I like, it's his birthday. It gives me an excuse to send a video from concerts when I used to be able to go to concerts. And I had one on the Smashing Pumpkins drummer Jimmy Chamberlain, was one of my favorite musicians, period. And Fulvio responded enthusiastically. So right there, I was like, Fulvio one day is going to come on Calcio Land. And then I found out that you speak great English, as everyone has heard. So that's how I kind of put you on my radar for this show. So let me ask you this. Tell me, what do you like about Jimmy Chamberlain? And if you had to pick one or two songs that show his brilliance as a drummer. And in my opinion, if you have Billy Corgan and Jimmy Chamberlain, you have Smashing Pumpkins. That's the band, in my opinion. Which songs would you pick?
Well, it's a lot of stuff, but starting by Jimmy Chamberlain, I'm passionate about rock music, as you can guess. And I think that Jimmy Chamberlain was the secret of the success of the Smashing Pumpkins. Some people keep saying that it's Dr. Gretzky, but I never agree with that. I think that when Jimmy Chamberlain went out of the group, something changed forever. Yeah, I think he was practically the secret weapon of this band and of his success. About the tracks, well, it's too obvious probably for me to say Jake USA, but it's obviously that's the answer. I think it's the best running. But if I may nominate another song, probably his contribution is very important into a song that, if I remember correctly, was into Melancholy album. and was called A Note to No One.
Yeah, and that
energetic song was could not be the same without that kind of drumming. So what are the other questions, David?
No, that's it. You gave us a perfect example of him. I wanted you to pick songs. You also gave us a great description. So yeah, I'm with you. I think without him, it just isn't Smashing Pumpkins. So well said. So Fulvio, I can't thank you enough. This was a lot of fun as usual. Great on Inter. Great on Spezia, and now I know we can talk music. So I guess you're stuck with me in 2021, and I look forward to doing more of these. So thank you so much, my friend. I hope you don't freak out too much during the game, and I look forward to chatting with you next month again. Thank you so much.
Always a pleasure. Take care. Ciao.